On Wednesday, January 8th, the state of Mississippi will execute Ronald Chris Foster on his 31st birthday for a murder he committed at the age of 17. He will be the first juvenile offender put to death in Mississippi since 1950. In October, four U.S. Supreme Court justices echoed the concerns of most nations of the world, leading human rights organizations, international law, and the United Nations, stating that we should put an end to this shameful practice. Ronald Chris Foster was assessed to have an IQ of 80 before his trial, which was never presented to the jury. Suffering abuse as a child, he began drinking at the age of 12 and was drunk when he rode his bike to a store without a weapon to commit a robbery. He murdered the clerk, George Shelton, with a gun that was kept at the store. Foster's attorney says he has the mental capacity of a 13-year-old. Joining us just before airtime was Stephen Harper, attorney on leave from the Capital Defenders Division of the Miami Public Defender's Office. He now works with the Juvenile Death Penalty Initiative, a coalition tracking death-eligible cases involving juveniles at pretrial, trial, or in post-conviction appeal. He teaches juvenile justice at the University of Miami School of Law. He began with some background on Ronald Chris Foster.
Ronald Chris Foster was a 17-year-old offender in Mississippi who was charged with robbing a convenience store, struggling with a gun with the owner of the store, and killing the owner of the store. He went to trial and lost and was sentenced to death in Mississippi. This was back in 1989. Several issues come up in his case. A lot of the information about him, his borderline retardation, his low IQ, some of the abuse and neglect that he suffered as a child, none of that was presented to the jury. So they weren't a fully informed jury making a fully informed decision about whether life was the appropriate sentence or not. So a lot of the issues that should have been presented to the jury simply were not. And that's a problem that's not uncommon in capital cases, unfortunately. The other thing was is that it's clear that he suffered from some very serious head injuries as a child. Again, how complicated those were, what effects they had, were never investigated by his attorneys and certainly never presented to the jury. Beyond that, there's some more general issues, such as American standards of justice. In other words, we punish according to the most culpable, and the most serious offenders like the Timothy McVeighs are the ones that apparently are supposedly eligible for the death penalty. 16, 17-year-old people that are less developed are less culpable. They shouldn't be subject to the same penalties. So one of the arguments against the juvenile death penalty just runs counter to basic standards of American justice.
You mentioned the fact that he had an abused childhood. Can you just give us a little more details on what his life was like?
He came from a very poor, underprivileged background, which is obviously not uncommon to a lot of kids who get into trouble. He had a very sort of dysfunctional family. He never really knew his father. He had a sort of a on-again, off-again mother. He started to get in trouble at this case. Just starting the first time in his life, he was actually starting to get into trouble. The biggest concern, as I said, was the fact that even as a young child, he had been hit in the head with a baseball bat. He had fallen off a motorcycle. He began to have some serious problems with that. When he did see his father was a very serious alcoholic. And so older brothers were sort of teaching him how to drink at a very young age. All this sort of chaotic, abusive, neglectful childhood was sort of what he was dealing with. And eventually he drops out of school in the eighth grade. So there's really very little going on, positive things going on in his life, a lot of negative things going on in his life, in addition to a lot of lack of intervention that he obviously desperately needed.
And he is an African-American, is that correct?
He is. Yes, he is.
So the work of the Juvenile Death Penalty Initiative that you're very involved with, Stephen Harper, you emphasize the points, first of all, that the immaturity of adolescence needs to be recognized, that adolescents are developmentally different from adults. Can you expand on that? Give us a sense of what it really means to be dealing with somebody who's 17 years old as opposed to dealing with an adult.
Well, I think any of us who have 17-year-olds or remember what it was like to be 17 know that we did things at 17 that we would never do again. They are far more, even a normal, well-raised child from a good family is far more impulsive, possesses far less judgment. Still, they're developing identity. They're still very much influenced by peers. They think everybody's looking at them. There's this, what they call, experts call adolescent narcissism. They're very self-centered. And that's why we in our culture, in our society, don't let people under 18 enter the military without parental rights, without voting, they don't let them enter into contracts. We let them drink alcohol until they're 21 or make medical decisions. So we know historically that kids are developmentally different and they're less possess less judgment and less maturity. And interestingly enough, in the last few years, there's been some amazing brain research showing that children are far less, adolescents even, are far less developed than we ever knew. The parts of the brain that are still developing are those that deal with judgment, impulse control, multitask, the kinds of things, values, that kind of thing. And so it's actually a biological issue, not just a moral issue, that's affecting how kids develop and how kids act and how kids think.
Which I guess would imply that they're also more amenable to rehabilitation than if they're still unformed. Is that true?
Absolutely. That's another major reason why we are opposed to the juvenile death penalty. In fact, why we have a separate juvenile justice system in America. Not only are kids less culpable, but they are, because they're not fully developed, more rehabilitatable given the right kind of intervention. Now, of course, that's not to say that somebody who commits a terrible crime should not be punished, but it's clearly to say that they should not receive the same ultimate punishment that we reserve for fully formed, fully culpable adults.
And we are speaking with Stephen Harper. He is an attorney from the state of Florida. He's now on leave from the Capital Division of the Miami Public Defender's Office, and he teaches juvenile justice at the University of Miami School of Law and is working very hard on the Juvenile Death Penalty Initiative, attempting to get the execution of juvenile offenders abolished in the United States. Can you give us a sense of where the United States stands and where the legal system stands? I understand there's 22 states now that allow this. Can you give us the overview?
Yes. In the United States itself, there are 38 states that permit the death penalty. Only 22 of those states now permit the executions of persons who are under 18 at the time of their crime. Now, those 22 states, only 15 have juvenile offenders on their death rows, and only 7 states have actually carried out executions of juveniles since the death penalty was reinstated back in the early 70s. So while we still have the juvenile death penalty in the United States, it's less and less used. And several states as we speak, like Florida, even Texas, Kentucky, Arizona, Arkansas, are actually considering legislation to abolish the death penalty for juveniles, similarly to the way that they abolished it for the mentally retarded, because juveniles are just simply less culpable.
And what about the international community
and
international law?
The international situation is really sort of shocking. We are the only country, along with Somalia, that has not signed the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, which, among other things, gets rid of the death penalty for any offender under 18. There are only 5 nations which continue to have the juvenile death penalty on the books and execute juveniles. Of that group, there are only 3, the United States, Iran, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo, that in the last 3 years have actually executed juvenile offenders. In the last 15 years, the United States has executed more juvenile offenders than all of the other countries in the world combined. So even Iraq, China, Yemen, Pakistan, those kinds of countries that we sort of think, wait a minute, they have terrible human rights, they're not executing juveniles. Really, only the United States is actively executing juvenile offenders.
And hasn't Texas taken the lead in terms of how many juveniles it's executed?
Absolutely. Texas is far and above the leading state. In fact, Texas itself has executed more juveniles in the last 15 years than all the other nations in the world combined. Texas executes more adults, more people than any other state in the country, and certainly more juveniles than any other state in the country. Although, interestingly enough, even the Texas legislature in its last session, a bill eliminating the death penalty for juveniles, passed the Texas House. So there is even movement in Texas.
And we are speaking about this issue, just to bring his name up again, Ronald Chris Foster. He was 17 at the time he committed a crime, and he is scheduled to be executed this Wednesday, January 8th, in the state of Mississippi. You yourself, Stephen Harper, have defended children offenders that have been sentenced to death. Can you just give us a sense of what it was like for you to work with some of these young people and what they go through, what the families go through?
Well, I think the best way of putting it is that the feeling that I've had in every single case that I've represented a kid in that situation is that if dealing with a kid that actually committed the crime, is that, you know, I keep thinking, this kid did a terrible thing. He can't even yet comprehend how terrible it is because he's just too young. He doesn't have the emotional equipment to deal with it, let alone make the decisions he has to make in the case in front of him. And he has had some horrendous life experiences. Every single child I've had that was involved in murdering another person had horrendous life experiences. And now this child's life may be over before it has really even started. Those are some of the feelings that I just invariably have when I'm dealing with a juvenile. Clearly, it's an almost impossible thing for the families of these kids to understand and to deal with, to get through it. You know, again, that is not to minimize the effect that that crime had on a victim and a victim's family and the horrible feelings and experiences that they go through by losing a loved one. But it's clear in every case that I've had that the juvenile is simply not prepared enough and not able enough to be able to withstand and make the decisions to withstand the experience.
And I guess we're going to be hearing a lot about the case of John Lee Malvo. And, of course, the powers that be will probably not want to abolish the execution of juvenile defenders. There's such an effort now to kill him. Do you think that's going to slow the process down?
Well, it's very interesting. On the one hand, Malvo case sort of shows all the best arguments for both sides. For those that believe in the death penalty for juveniles, here is a case that created widespread terror and terrible personal tragedy. They believe that the crime itself is so awful that it really doesn't matter how old the offender is or who he is. The flip side of that is we know that he was a very dependent upon, looked up to, and was very much under the influence of a far more powerful and only adult in his life. And this more culpable grown-up who substituted for his father, took him from his mom, kept him away from immigration authorities, put him on this weird, sparse diet, clothed him, educated him, weapons trained him, and all this while inculcating with an angry religious beliefs and politics. And all this is occurring in a very critical developmental period. You know, that's when we confirm adolescents in churches and have them started to adopt religious beliefs. So he's a very impressionable young kid. And so it's, in many ways, it just sort of illustrates exactly the kinds of things we're talking about. He's just far less culpable than the angry and disturbed adult figure in this case.
Well, Stephen Harper, thank you very much. We would like to come back to you and speak with you more down the road, especially when another case comes up. And we'll hope that something changes for Ronald Chris Foster before Wednesday, although I guess it looks very unlikely that that will happen.
Thank you for having me. And I think that many of these cases are happening. The United States is changing. The international pressure is increasing. And I would just urge that for those people that are interested and want to get involved, to keep pressuring politicians in those states that still have the juvenile death penalty to get rid of it. It'll happen.
Well, thank you very much. Again, Stephen Harper, he works with the Juvenile Death Penalty Initiative and teaches juvenile justice at the University of Miami School of Law. Thanks so much for being with us today on Flashpoints.
Thanks for having me.